Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the effervescent, ever wonderful Drea Kaufman.
Ever tired.
Isn't that what happens, though, when you're a mom? Isn't that kind of classic, right? I mean, I've never been a mom, so I don't know.
You've never had that personal experience.
No, so. No.
I feel like it's true for all parents, but
I think that makes sense.
I feel like it's a little especially true for us working parents. Mm. So
yeah, that makes a lot of
sense.
I'm
a little tired.
Well, as we're recording this, and this won't matter in the future, but as we're recording this, it'll be the last show for 2018 as we look towards 2019, and it's episode 101.
Woo.
Yeah, which is really exciting. So we're on the other side of the podcast in the sense that we're on the downhill slope now, Drea. You know, the rest of it's... we're working towards the end of the entire series.
Y'all,
and the
it's
podcast.
All down here from downhill from here.
Luckily, it's not. Actually, you know, there's so much to happen. There's so much good stuff to come in these books, which I can't wait to get to. But before we do that, one thing, as a Harry Potter fan, I was so excited. So there's a company called La La Land Records, and they do scores for movies. And lots of times they'll bring out like complete scores or expanded scores. And I love movie soundtracks. Well, they did a Harry Potter one, the John Williams soundtrack collection. And it's like 7 hours worth of, over 7 hours worth of music, almost eight, for all the movies that he scored for Harry Potter. So, of course, the Philosopher's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And I've got to say, it's delightful. And wonderful and brilliant, and we're getting married. It's just fantastic. I really, really love it. So if you're a Harry Potter fan and you love scores, especially John Williams, this is totally worth the money that it costs. So yeah, it's amazing.
I feel like you should tell me how you really feel about it.
Yeah, I would, but we have to do a whole other part of the show. So you know, I just wanted people to know that because it is something not to miss. It's great, especially if you're a big Harry Potter fan and, of course, a big John Williams fan and just love movie scores. This is great stuff. I didn't know this, but he had actually created a basically like a children's symphony with all of the music from the original Harry Potter movie, and that's presented here on this set, so you actually get to hear, and there's actually some themes in that didn't actually get used in the movie, which is really cool. So anyway, this is not a score podcast, but you know, it is a Harry Potter podcast, and I thought people might
but now
know.
It is, yeah. So you're welcome, y'all.
But if you would like to find us, you can, all over the place. Owlpost is legitimately, I think, everywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show so you get it as soon as we drop it. And, of course, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do give us a star rating and review and help the show grow. You know, there are other Harry Potter podcasts out there. So if you like what we do here, please give us a star rating review and let people know that. And then we take those reviews, honestly, we just read them out on the show. So we let people know what you said about us here on the air. You could find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where you can find everything that's going on The Nerd Party, because there's so many shows now. Pretty much every part of fandom that you like, we probably have a show for. And then maybe you wanted to send us an email, so you can do that. Go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, and you can send an email to Drea and I. Now, Drea, we are in Chapter 7. It's called The Ministry of Magic. And I thought the most interesting thing about this chapter is really that this chapter is set up for things that are going to happen later on in the book. Because the Ministry of Magic is going to be the site of some big things that happen. And so in many ways, us visiting the Ministry of Magic with Harry here and kind of her giving us the lay of the land is, it's like she has to do this. So this chapter doesn't have a ton in it that's like revolutionary or adds an amazing amount to the plot at this moment, but it will be something that helps us as we move forward in the book, and especially towards the end of the book.
Yeah, it does kind of set us up for what's to come. And a big part of this chapter that was kind of interesting is that it's relatively true to the movie adaptation. There's a few small tweaks here and there, how kind of Harry wakes up and how his morning goes. But for the most part, there's one kind of key thing they changed that I miss in this chapter. But I really feel like this chapter is also kind of, it's almost like an homage to Mr. Weasley. And I really feel like he's the main character of this chapter, because we really get to kind of like visit the wizarding world through his foot, like in his shoes, which is really an interesting thing to kind of do, but a way to be very expository, but still sort of have this strangely familiar feeling to it, which I think is what she wants you to feel.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's really fun because it's something that I had even kind of thought of as I was reading about that, was that point that this gives us an opportunity to kind of know Mr. Weasley in his element. But the most fun part about that is when he's out of his element, in the sense that, you know, they're having to travel to the ministry by muggle means, you know, the underground and everything. And he is just ecstatic about everything and how awesome it is and like how incredibly, you know, amazing what we come up with as muggles is. And I think that's it makes it kind of a joyful chapter, which is very interesting because, you know, the overarching part of this chapter is the fact that we're going to this hearing, and yet there's all of this levity that's happening with Mr. Weasley, especially as they travel to the ministry, that kind of makes you forget why we're actually going to the ministry. And I really appreciated that. She finds so many different ways to kind of, I think, upend your expectations about what's going to happen in a chapter by doing something like that. And it was just really fun because I just like spending time with Mr. Weasley. He just seems like somebody who is a guy that you wouldn't mind hanging out with because he's so jovial. And that comes off here, even with everything that's going on. And so I really appreciated that fact.
Yeah, I really love that you also get this really interesting perspective, not just the whimsy of him going into the office or the ministry, but this interesting perspective on how, I mean, we've been told how he's regarded in the wizarding world, right? We're told that his department is maybe not the most illustrious and that muggle things are generally looked down on, but we actually kind of get to see how that plays out firsthand here, that he's got this tiny like little broom closet of an office, but he always looks for the best, right? And it's almost like he's just grateful to be able to focus and do what he loves.
You know, yes, absolutely. Like you can tell that something that we mentioned earlier in a previous chapter was the fact that, you know, when we were talking about Percy and the way he's talked about how their family has been kind of looked down upon and held back because of, you know, Mr. Weasley's proclivity for enjoying things of the muggle variety, even though he's not supposed to as a wizard. And we see that, I think, play out here in the fact that he is in basically almost a broom closet, much like where Harry grew up for the first 11 years of his life. And it's interesting that there's kind of that parallel between Harry and Mr. Weasley in the sense of the way that they're treated because of who they are and what they represent to the people above them. And it makes sense in many ways, I think, why the Mr. and Mrs. Weasley have such a heart for Harry when they know how he's been treated, because they understand that feeling. It's a little bit different because it's not coming from their family, right? Except for now Percy, who's turned into a huge, you know, turd. But what we get here is we see that the entire wizarding world has kind of treated them the same way that the Dursleys treated Harry, which is like second-class citizen. And so I think that's a really neat thing to have them pull out.
Yeah, and I think I really enjoyed the exchange with Kingsley Shacklebot we get here, where he's almost like yelling at Mr. Weasley, but it's clearly this like fake conversation. And you can just tell by her writing that these two gentlemen truly enjoy this sort of facade that they have to put on, and that they really do enjoy each other's company, because there's a couple of like winked exchanges and under the breath, and oh, Molly's making meatballs tonight, and you know, like it's just, it's such a sweet exchange, and this attempt for normalcy amongst kind of everything else we're faced with.
It is really interesting, you know, the way that, you know, you get to the ministry and they're having to pretend like they don't really know each other, even though they do, which I really appreciate. But something that I thought was interesting going all the way back to the beginning of the chapter, kind of jumping around on this one, because there's not a ton that happens, but it's really interesting because you get downstairs as Harry gets up, and there's a few people actually there, and you've got Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, Sirius, Lupin, and Tonks are all there, and Tonks has just gotten off of guard duty, whatever it is they're guarding. And Lupin says something, "What were you saying about Scrimgeour?" Which is a name that will mean something later on, which is kind of cool that we get that here, and how that this person has been asking Kingsley some very interesting, funny questions, maybe thinking something's up. And so we get a little bit of a picture about what these people are up to, but they also spend the rest of that time in the morning really trying to make Harry feel good about what's about to happen. And since they don't think it's going to be an issue, they're going to be, you know, and we've heard this name before, the fact that, we know Susan Bones, and I think this is probably her aunt, is my guess. Amelia Bones is the person that Harry's going to be talking to. She's, you know, and so you just get this whole sense of like they're trying to make him feel good. You know, it's going to be fine and everything. And don't worry, you know, you're going to be, there's nothing to worry about. And then we get to the ministry and everything's fine, until the last page and a half, where Arthur's partner tells him, "You've got to go right now. They're having the meeting right now. You're missing it." You know, basically, and it's in the dungeon. Basically, it's down next to the Department of Ministries. Hint, hint. And it's in these courtrooms that haven't been used in years, and Mr. Weasley, one, can't figure out why in the world they're doing it there, but two, it makes it so much more ominous now, this meeting, and it definitely makes Harry start to feel much more uncomfortable as he's shoved into this room, into this meeting. I mean, everything goes from like, oh, it's going to be fine, to, oh, crap.
Yeah, it's just, it goes from this sort of, she does a really interesting job of taking you from this, like, okay, so Harry's nervous, and she's sort of like calmed you as a reader. Oh, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. It's simple. And then in the blink of an eye, it became this huge thing again. But it's almost like she can't, like, she doesn't give you an opportunity to worry. Like, you don't spend the entire chapter worrying, but all of a sudden you've got something to worry about, like right at the end. So it's just so interesting how she turns you kind of on a dime, and you rush and you get there and then you don't know what to expect and you walk in and it's the next chapter.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because she kind of puts that feeling on you right as you're about to turn the page towards the next chapter. And so you don't have to wait in that the kind of like heightened sense too long. And I think that's right. really interesting, you know, but it also creates this sense of you legitimately wanting to turn the page to see what happens next.
Yeah, she definitely leaves you on a chapter cliffhanger.
Yes. And, you know, I think one of the parts about this that was really interesting is that when we get to the ministry, is that as they're walking through the hallway, we see this huge fountain, which has a wizard standing there with his wand pointed in the sky. And then you have this group of magical creatures like a centaur and a goblin and a house elf all looking up adoringly at the witch and the wizard. And I think it's fascinating because this fountain that they pass is the definition of wizarding kind as we know it. And it explains so well the attitudes that we see wizards have about beings like goblins or house elves or maybe even centaurs. And it explains, you know, why Ron feels the way he does about certain magical creatures, you know, or honestly, it explains why pretty much everybody in the wizarding world feels that way about all of these magical creatures, because they see themselves as the center of the wizarding universe.
It explains a lot, and it provides you a very clear understanding and sort of this small, concise package of just a visual depiction. And again, it plays into her idea of media, and in this case, the arts, you know, being very influential, and in this case, very indicative of what, like, the feelings and the current, you know, for me, I always thought of the fountain was a good summary of the ministry, right? Like, that's just a good summation of the ministry as a whole. So, I found that interesting. I did like, though, that Harry said he would throw in, what was it, like 10 galleons mm-hmm. if all goes well right. today. He'll toss that in there into this sort of wishing well. I want to say that all the proceeds of the fountain went towards...
They go towards the hospital, the St. Mundungo's right. Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries. So, yeah, that's also one, I think, maybe the first time that we've had that mentioned as well. And so...
We did get that, I think, in the last book.
Okay, because okay. That's when, that makes sense, yeah.
When Dumbledore tells us about
right. yes.
Neville's family, about his parents, he does
yes,
mention that
you're
that's
absolutely
where he is,
right.
And that's
I
what
can't
they do.
Believe that skipped my mind.
Yeah, well, it's kind of out of order from what we're used
yeah, that's
to
true.
In like, the films. But yeah, that and that, I think, to Harry reminds him of that, right? Not only is it sort of a wishing well, but it's one that he kind of feels would benefit a close colleague and friend of his. You know, he feels like it's just the least he can do for Neville without Neville knowing. So
yeah, no, I think it is a nice little callback to what we learned about Neville and his family. And also, I think, again, it highlights how wonderful Harry is in the fact that he's thinking of other people even as he may be going to his expulsion from wizarding kind. And so it makes a lot of sense why he would say, if everything goes well, I'll come back by and throw in some galleons, because otherwise he's going to need that money, because that's the only money he's got.
Right.
And it also is really interesting. I love the little scene where the guy is so bored, he's taking the wands, you know, for all the visitors, and he only realizes right at the end who it is that he's got their wand, and he's like, well, hang on, and Mr. Weasley's like, oh, thank you, Eric, and they firmly grabs Harry and by the shoulder and kind of walks away.
Ashes him along, yeah.
It's great.
I think that's funny that he's just not paying attention, and then all of a sudden he is paying attention, but it's like a little bit too late.
Yes, well, and I mean, I think it's kind of funny because she's kind of doing that thing where it's like Harry's at the DMV basically, and the people aren't paying attention to you. They're just gonna like next, you know, and it doesn't matter to them. So I just think it is very funny that happened. And again, it's one of those places where we see the humor. And of course, too, we have the funny moment where he mentions about why they have the notes whizzing around like paper airplanes. He's like, because owls, the mess, you know, you're like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah, that I did find funny.
I mean, can you imagine?
We tried that once. Just a little, like, the little things, right, that just make it really humorous. And the little touches that she takes the time to add, it's just, it has such a profound impact on how, you know, we feel about it, because it's just hilarious.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was funny, too, that his office mate Perkins is reading the Quibbler, which is great as well. So,
which we'll learn more about in future chapters.
And one more thing that's interesting is that we see that there are some anti-Muggle pranksters who have been basically pranking Muggles who go to use the toilet, and they go to flush, and instead of flushing, it throws it all up. And
it basically explodes.
Yeah, which is gross. But I think that this is an interesting thing, because we see here that this has been happening for a while now, maybe over the summer, which gives us our first maybe inclination that things are not all copacetic in Wizarding World, that there are people who are maybe starting to act out against Muggles when they wouldn't normally have, because a certain you-know-who is back. So I think that's a nice little, like...
How dare you.
I know. I'm just tying something together there. So I thought that was a really... It's very subtle the way she just puts that in there. And yet it makes so much sense. And it helps create kind of a sense of unease in a chapter that's had some funny and some serious. And then, of course, ends up... It's had some serious. And it also ends up on a very... tense moment, which leads us into the next chapter where we actually get to the hearing.
And we get to meet some new and very important characters in the next chapter as well. So there's kind of a lot packed into the next chapter, and I feel like she's given us a little bit of a reprieve before she sort of just unloads all kinds of stuff on us in the next one. So it'll be really interesting to see that transition and to continue through our cliffhanger.
Yeah, I am excited to get there, but you will have to wait till next year to hear what we have to say.
Legitimately next year, guys.
Or if you're listening to this in the future, you can just go to the next podcast.
Less of a cliffhanger for you, but you could wait until next year to listen to it if you really wanted to. I don't know that we recommend
that. What if you're listening to this like in April?
It's January 2nd.
But for those of you binge listening, enjoy. But Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you and talk to you about everything that's going on with the holiday season and, of course, the Harry Potter universe and what we're talking about here on Outpost, where can people find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman. And it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on all these different social media platforms like Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Letterboxd under MattRushing02. You can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking all about Star Wars each and every week. I do a couple shows on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I also do our General Geek Show, which we talk about all the fandoms we love over there, and that's called The 602 Club. And last but not least, doing a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your Outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.